at its annual convention, the Wisconsin Democratic Party, June 5 and June 6, will meet in Milwaukee. One of the things they will do is they will pick the next state chairman. There are five candidates for the next chairmanship of the state Democratic Party. Wisconsin I has invited all five to come in and talk about their bids for chair, and all five have accepted. And I want to thank first Joe Winicky, former state assembly member, former state senator, former state chairman.
Former Joe, a lot.
Former. Well, I've been covering you since 1988.
Yeah.
Well, 1980s.
And you're a good reporter. So.
Well, thank you. But you have had a very interesting career. You were in the assembly, 83-93, in the state senate, 93-98. Political director for operating engineers. Then you were a state official in the Doyle administration.
Yep.
What are you doing now? Full-time campaign for state chair?
Well, I partially retired a year or two ago. I've been blessed with good pensions, and I do miss politics to some degree, but that's not why I'm running. I'm running because I can't believe what's happened to this proud political party that I've been a part of for 34 years, and believe that I can help start winning elections again, because what I see Scott Walker and the Republican leadership doing to proud institutions that Wisconsinites have always supported, like our K-12 educational system, our university and vocational technical education system, our state parks, not funding them at all, eliminating public radio and television subsidies. What is this? This isn't the state that I know. And I want to stay. I think I have something to offer to help bring it back.
And it should be added that you have a cold, so we provided you with tea and some water.
Yes, I've never had tea in my life. This is going to be an interesting experience, Steve.
Well, here's what you said in your letter announcing your candidacy. When I chose not to seek a third term as chairman in 2009, I left feeling that things in our state were in pretty good shape. But, Joe, let's talk about that. Since then, the only two victories, the election of Tammy Baldwin and President Obama, carried the state for president.
In a reelect.
In a reelect.
Yes.
Right. Are those the only two victories? Otherwise, your party has been sliding backwards?
We have won a few assembly races, very few. When I left as chair in June of 2009, we had elected Barack Obama president. We had reelected Jim Doyle in a tough reelect against Congressman Green. We had reelected Herb Cole. Yeah, well, maybe that one wasn't as hard. We elected Steve Kagan to Congress and had five members of Congress in our delegation.
Yeah.
Won the state Senate back in 2006.
Dave Obey in the 7th and Kagan in the 8th. Excuse me, go ahead.
But we won back the Senate in 2006. We won back the Assembly in 2008. Now we have Tammy Baldwin, as you've mentioned, and Doug LaFollette. We have 36 members of the Assembly. That's unbelievable. And frankly, you can't blame all that on reapportionment.
How many Dems were in the Assembly when you served
52.
There?
As low as 52 and as high as 58.
Okay.
The right number, by the way, to govern is about 55.
Right, because then you can lose two or three on
without,
any one big
but
issue.
But when you get the Republicans are going to find this time, that with so many members, they're going to start infighting. They always do.
Okay.
It's all about power.
Well, you say you don't want to cast blame on anybody, but the tone of your letter says the party hasn't had a good run since you left it.
Do
you fault the chairman?
No.
You don't?
I mean, well, would Mike and I have done things differently? Of course. Mike and I have differences of opinion on messaging and on recruitment. But do I think Mike Tate is the cause of all our problems? Heck no. No, and he's done a very good job on some parts of the party, like fundraising. See, for me, the issue isn't Mike Tate. The issue isn't any individual. The issue is, what are we doing wrong and how can we correct it? And two things that I think you just have to look at about what's going on with the Democratic Party. First is candidate recruitment. In the last election for the Assembly, Steve,
yep,
31 out of 60 Republican incumbent Assembly members had free rides.
You say this in 2014, we left 31 of 60 Assembly Republicans off with free rides. If I'm elected chair, those days are over.
They
we
are.
Won't win a lot of those seats, but we might just steal a few. And that's not me saying that. That's a quote
me.
From your letter.
And I would say it again
to Democrats
today, but I don't have to. You just did.
Well, but isn't that a matter of using party resources to support candidates?
Oh, absolutely.
And heavily our seats?
In some cases. Now, and here's what happened. Look, when we won the Assembly back in 2008, I don't remember the exact numbers. It's hard to look at these things and remember everything. But I believe we left only five or so Republicans with free rides. Well, guess what? We won some seats. won a seat in Grant County in that period that we hadn't won in 80 years. Phil Garthwaite, if you remember the name.
Yeah.
And sometimes just putting candidates on the ballot matters. Now, in addition, by having candidates on the ballot, you help build local parties because they have something to work with. When you have nobody there, it's very difficult to get people organized for that one time that your senator gubernatorial candidate wanders through your county. The other thing that happens is if you recruit candidates everywhere, and say, for example, Calumet County. Jervis Hefner used to represent Calumet County. It used to have a Democratic rep for 25 years. Now it seems hopeless. Well, it's not hopeless. But what happens if last election we got 37% of the vote in Calumet County, and by fielding a candidate and putting together an effort, we got that up to 40? You know who's going to benefit from that? Hillary Clinton, if she's the Democratic nominee, mm-hmm. and Russ Feingold, if he's
Do you want Hillary to be the nominee?
Well, I'll leave that up to the primary and caucus states, because as party chair, I want to have strict neutrality on this. And that includes, by the way, in legislative races and statewide races in Wisconsin. I don't think the state party should be involved in primaries amongst two good standing Democrats, which takes out at least one person in this state, and that's David Clark.
Well, let me ask a overarching question, Joe. What's at stake as you look at the 2016, 2018, and 2020 elections for your Democratic Party?
Well, as I've said, I think even in that letter that you got, that if we don't beat Ron Johnson and we don't gain seats in the state legislature, I won't run for another term. I want to put my money where my mouth is. I don't need to do this anymore, Steve, for my ego. I don't need to do it truthfully financially, although, you know, I'm not a rich man. But I think there's something to offer, and I think I can help make things better. And I wanted to put that pledge in because I want to say, look, if I'm wrong, find somebody else. But somebody has to fix the broken pieces of this puzzle to make the proud Democratic Party that Wisconsin has had for 50 years and bring it back.
Okay, let's talk about messaging. First of all, I'm going to ask you about messaging, organization, which we already kind of covered, mm-hmm. and fundraising. But let's talk about messaging. In your letter, you identify themes that your party should be better mm-hmm. at in terms of appealing to voters. Economic security, educational opportunity, equal opportunity. And then you also
equal
say...
Equal rights, I think. It was the third one.
Yes, straight, gay, black, white, Native American. Yep. So, yeah, we agree. You also say it is far better to stick to a handful of powerful issues than to get bogged down in 100 battles at once. Please
oh, that's
explain.
Absolutely true. Too many people say, well, we have a Democratic Party platform, so therefore just read the platform. You read our platform lately, Steve?
Nope.
And you're one who might. That's the scary part. People don't read this stuff. Our platform is the Encyclopedia Britannica of Democratic values. It's 51 separate paragraphs on probably 70 separate issues. You can't win elections with that, you know, hodgepodge of, you know, A to Z. We have to focus on simple messages that people get. And I want to focus on economic security, mm-hmm. equal educational opportunity, and equal rights. And I'll start with the educational component, Steve. I want the Democratic Party, instead of having a picture of Scott Walker, which we did for a whole year on the front page of our website, I want the Democratic Party to have some simple messages on it, one of which is going to be public dollars should go to public schools, period. Simple.
Do away with the choice program.
Just not fund it. I'm not. You want to have a choice
what
program?
What about in the city of Milwaukee?
I'm saying you got to make tough choices.
Okay.
Our Constitution, Article 10, Section 3, and you know me, I'm kind of a policy wonk, says that we guarantee a free and equal public education, period. Now, if there's a charter in the public schools, fine. If it's tied to the public schools, fine. But we are creating a two-tiered educational system between the haves and the have-nots, and we're using people that need help in certain parts of the state as props. We can only do so much. We don't have the money to fund everything. Like, for example, religious schools. I have a brother who told me this just the other day again. His kids are now out of school, but he didn't want state support to send his kids to a Lutheran religious school. And the reason was he knew there would be strings tied to that. He wanted to know that if they wanted to teach religion in those classes that they could. You can't do that in a public setting because of separation of church and state. But I want us to stand for something. And the reason this is so important politically, besides policy, because the policy I know I'm right on, politically, where the Democrats are going to make their resurgence as a political party is going to be in rural Wisconsin. And I'm here to tell you, if we don't get in front of this issue soon, rural schools are going to die. The funding losses that are happening with the first, the $1.6 billion, and now another $135 million. And on top of that, for the first time, if a school, say in La Crosse, if La Crosse Aquinas, which now can take choice dollars, gets 50 kids that were in the public school to go to Aquinas at $7,000, that's $350,000, not coming out of the general fund of the state, coming out of La Crosse Public Schools. A direct dollar-for-dollar transfer. We can't have a two-tiered school system in this state. Aquinas did very well all those years as a parochial school, and they had one heck of a good basketball player in Bronson Koenig.
So do you think the number one way to appeal and build support in rural areas is stressing the idea of saving these rural schools? Is that the number one issue
number
in
one.
Rural areas?
Number one.
What's number two?
Economic security. People are scared for their future. And tell Democrats, in the last election, and I've heard Democrats talk about this after the election in their postmortems, well, they voted for the minimum wage hike. I've heard that over and over and over. Well, minimum wage is an important part of the Democratic security message. But it's not the only part. My gosh, 87% of the people in the state make more than the minimum wage. It's not an issue. If it doesn't affect you personally, it's not how you vote. We have to get into issues, and I'll give you several examples on economic security. One is the minimum wage. How about student loan debt? Gosh, you send a kid to college today, you're walking a minimum $50,000 to $75,000 in debt. Who can afford that? That's like my first mortgage was $60,000, Steve. I don't know what yours was. But
So you favor Senator Hansen's bill? There'd be tax breaks on the interest you pay on your home loans, or do you want to go beyond that?
Oh, absolutely. I think Dave's a great state senator. I think he's a progressive who came from the streets in a way. I believe Dave started as a driving a garbage truck, I believe, years ago.
I thought he taught after.
But the point is, he's a blue-collar guy who gets how things affect blue-collar people. Democrats have lost their way on this issue. So instead of, getting into the negativity stuff, let's focus on a handful of simple messages. The third issue, besides economic security, is equal rights. And, I'll tell you, the Republican Party doesn't just pander to prejudice these days. They outright practice it. And when I say equal rights, it's not, just talking about issues like immigration or, the plight in the black community. It's all kinds of things, and those are important. But it's also, when a woman makes 70-some cents on the dollar to a man, when young people are being told that they can't go to college because they're not going to get the breadth requirement in their rural school, that's discrimination. We have to tie a whole bunch of issues, and these are all things Republicans are doing. The vouchers, the taking away of voting rights, all these different issues. We have to stand up and say, let this issue define them, the Republicans, for pandering to our worst instincts, and let it define us as Democrats as supporting the right instincts.
One issue, you just talked about economic security. Here's what you say in your letter, support for the right to collectively bargain.
Absolutely.
Well, but do you honestly think you can overturn Act 10?
Not in 2015 or 16. Probably not
you
in 2017.
Can see the day?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Collective bargaining is a basic right that has been enshrined in this country since the National Labor Relations Act of 1935. Just because Scott Walker needed to have to have somebody he could punish public employees and now private sector union employees,
right,
doesn't mean that this is the way it has to be. I'm a Democrat, and by the way, I'm the only Democrat in this race out of five that has a union background. My grandfather was a member of the Carpenters Union. My dad was a 50-year member of the Carpenters Union. My mom was an AFSCME member. I was an operating engineer. My son Brian is a union electrician. This goes to my heart.
You also say on your website your wife is a member of WEAC.
God, you're better than I am. She was.
It's on your
she
website. She now works it's not at that Epic. I'm trying to help you.
Right,
it's on
no,
your
but she was. And I forget my wife. That's dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, we've been married happily for 35 years. But yeah, Debbie now works at Epic, but she worked for the Verona Schools.
So in your speech to the Democratic State Convention, you're going to say we can repeal Act 10 and the new right-to-work law affecting private sector unions?
If we can get our majorities back, absolutely. Now, saying that, will it be at the convention? I think I only get 3 minutes.
Oh, okay.
You know,
so you're
going to
spend the next
so
few weeks saying that?
I'm going to say that over the next few months, yes.
Okay.
And by the way, I believe it. I believe that we can repeal Act 10. Maybe not in its entire, I mean, can we restore collective bargaining? Can we restore the grievance procedure, which is so sacred? And by the way, remember, when I worked for the Doyle administration, I was in charge of collective bargaining and grievance procedure. So I know
Office
this
Office of State Employee Relations.
Right. So, yes, we can do this. But we can't do it unless we can get a governor back and one house of the legislature. And frankly, we're probably not getting the assembly back before redistricting. But can we get them to 44 or 45 heading into redistricting? I think so. Can we get the Senate back? Yes. Can we elect a Democratic governor in 18? You bet.
And what's the downside if you don't do any of these things? Is your party in the wasteland?
Yes.
Forever?
For a while. And that goes back to that pledge I made, Steve, that if I don't add seats,
if you don't pick up seats,
I won't
you're
run again because it's the only right thing to do.
Okay. Now let's talk about third. I'm reading from your letter. We need to rebuild our party from the bottom up. You saw my interview with Senator Vinehout
yes.
1 week ago.
Yes, I did.
I was surprised
by the negativity of it all.
Well, here's what she said. That she, in 2005, nominated you for state chairman. And
I consider her a friend, Steve.
On a platform of rebuilding the party from the bottom up, and I'm quoting from her interview with me a week ago, it didn't happen. Joe's had his chance. I want to give you a chance to respond.
Well, I don't agree with her characterization. If you talk to many of the counties, for example, something we're not doing today that we will do again is we sent out a lot of these rural county parties, especially. They don't have access to all kinds of news services or anything else. We used to send them several times a week, news clippings, talking points, sample letters to the editor, things like that that aren't being done today. That's part of how you build a party from the bottom up. I respect these local counties. I do believe that we can do better than I did before. But in Senator Vinehout's interview, and I don't want to sound negative, but I didn't understand why she has her hand-picked candidate, a person who's been a member of the party for under a year.
Martha Lanning, and yep. We'll be interviewing her on April the 8th.
That's
okay,
fine.
Go ahead.
And that's fine, and everybody has their choice in that. But I didn't understand if we've got to rebuild a political party, and I think we do, and there's five decent people running for chair, I'm not going to sit here and trash four of them. I believe that they're all good people, and I don't understand how that helps us. If I'm elected chair on June 6th, I'll probably take that Sunday off on June 7th, and hopefully I'll get to play golf or something. But on June 8th, I'm going to work. And one of the things I got to do is Humpty Dumpty's got to pick up the pieces of a bruising election.
Okay.
Well, you don't do that by being negative.
Following up on that, if you want to, I want to give you a chance to describe why you'd be a better chair than, do you want to go down Jason Ray of Milwaukee?
Jason's a friend. Jason is somebody that served me well as chairman of the Platform Resolutions Committee. I personally believe that on message, recruitment, experience, and the like, I'm a better candidate today.
Okay.
5 or 10 years from now, Jason might be a better candidate than me.
Okay.
I just think that this is a critical time, a very critical time, and I will not say anything at all critical. He's a decent man.
You pointed. You said that Martha Lanning has only been a Democratic for for a year. You don't know her, so you don't want to offer any reasons why you'd be a better chair than her.
I don't know enough about her,
okay.
To be honest. I mean, when you think about it, I've been a chair of this state party for 4 years. We won elections when I was there. I think that's pretty important. I was a member of the Assembly. I was a member of the Senate. I was on a city council. I was a political director for a statewide labor union. I was a division administrator for the state. Compare the pieces, but. Can I be critical of Martha? No. I can just say she hasn't been a party member very long, and I don't know much about her.
Okay. You want to say why you'd be a better chair than former Representative Jeff Smith out of Eau Claire?
Jeff's a good guy. I've known him. I don't know Jeff as well as I know Jason, for example, but that's just years when being involved. I think he has something to offer. He has a passion for what he's doing. And no, I don't have anything negative to say.
And finally, you want to contrast why you'd be a better chair than former Representative Steve Smith of Chalet?
I think Steve Smith's a great guy, period. Steve's one of those guys that if you ever talk to him and when you interview him, you'll find this. He's just a good salt of the earth person. I want all these people to come together if I win to help me.
Okay.
And if I don't win, I want them to come together to help whoever does. I just think that when you look at these types of elections, you do a lot better with honey than vinegar if you're talking amongst Democrats. I don't want to sound like Reagan on the 11th commandment, you know.
Thou shalt speak no evil. Okay.
Right. But I don't think we benefit as a party that I think is somewhat fractured. There's a very upset wing of the Democratic Party out there.
There is indeed. But now let's talk about fundraising, Joe.
Yeah.
You and I know how this works.
Yeah, 60% of my time or more.
Well, okay. Here's my question. You're calling on some of the groups that write some pretty big checks in election cycles, and their representatives look at you and say, Joe, why should I give to your assembly candidates when redistricting is going to keep them out of power for a while? How do you answer that?
Well, first of all, one thing that we haven't done well enough on is to understand that most groups that want to support political campaigns have a certain amount of money for both sides. We haven't even gone out and gotten that part that they've set aside for us. I mean, I'm talking to people without naming names because that wouldn't be right, and also elected officials that didn't do this, is that I'm talking to people a couple of years ago, and they're saying, you know, I've got X amount of money set aside, but nobody ever even called me. Well, I'm going to call them. But saying that, we have to win on message. We have to be able to, where the Democrats are better is on small donor grassroots funding. It's a new world with Citizens United, and we don't know where that world's going to go, but I sure hope that the United States Supreme Court gets a change of heart pretty soon, because right now we're moving towards an oligarchy. And
In the post-Citizens United world, that does not favor your party, correct?
At this level, it does.
Although
not.
I'm going to get emails saying the George Soros's are favor your
yeah,
party.
I haven't seen a lot of those checks coming to the state Democratic Party or to local candidates for county board, school board, state assembly, or Senate. The Republicans, on the other hand, were out there fighting for the Iron County Board of Supervisors for the Geobic Taconite mine.
Right.
So, you know.
Why hasn't your party been able to beat Scott Walker three times? 2010, 2012, 2014.
I think there's several things. One, on the recall, he was the new kid on the block. And I can tell you thousands of people voted for Scott Walker that didn't like his policies, but didn't think he had done an impeachable offense. And, you know, issues matter, elections matter. He won. And a lot of people say, look, I wouldn't vote for him, you know, down the road, but I would vote for him today. I think the Democratic Party's message as it relates to Walker is missing one huge component. It's fair and proper to compare and contrast Governor Walker. And I always call him Governor Walker because he earned the title, even though I don't like him as my governor. Governor Walker won. We come up and challenge him. He's done horrible things to this state, in my opinion, on public policy issues. But what the Democrats have failed to do, Steve, is compare and contrast what, you know, what he has done, but then pivot into what we will do for you. People want to vote for something. They don't want to vote against, against, and against. And what the Democrats have done too much in the last 4 years, it's a broken record. We hate Scott Walker. That gets us 46.5% of the vote. It doesn't get us to 50. Until we say Scott Walker, no, we shouldn't say hate. We should say Scott Walker has done a bad job as governor for this reason, this reason, this reason, this reason. I hope you agree. And here's what, if you vote for me, this is what we will do differently. And that's why I think we're losing today. By the way, I'd say this. I think Scott Walker would have a very difficult time winning in Wisconsin again.
What about our spring presidential primary? Are you saying he'd be a favorite son candidate? Are you saying...
Oh, in the primary, sure, he's going to win Wisconsin if he's still in the race.
Well, if you're the
I
state...
I mean, he's the favorite son, yeah.
If you're the state chair, would your don't endorse in a primary hold true...
Doesn't affect Republicans.
No, I understand. But here's my question. In you don't believe that in a primary, the state chair should endorse, right?
Correct.
If Hillary Clinton is challenged in a primary, does that same rule apply?
Yes.
If Elizabeth Warren gets in?
Yes.
Do you expect Hillary to be
gubernatorial campaign, same thing. A state legislative race, This happened to me in a negative way. I understand it full well.
You ran for the assembly.
And I was blocked by the state Democratic Party and the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee from even getting something as basic as a voter list. If I'm chair of this party, anybody who's a member in good standing will get access to the same stuff, provided they pay for it.
Is your campaign then a payback at some of these wrong decisions?
Care less about that. I just think we have to do the right thing in the future.
You've run for Congress, county executive, state.
You've run for a lot of things. I'm 15-4.
Is this laying the groundwork? Do you want to be on the short list of Democratic candidates for governor?
No.
Under no circumstances.
I want to my wife. I was stunned when she said I could run for chair again. My wife would never allow such things. We're pretty close, and that wouldn't work. I'm not interested in that. I couldn't raise the money anyway. What I want to do is set the stage. By the way, when I'm talking about being chair, I would be stunned if I win this election that if I did this for more than 4 years. I want to set the stage for the next person. Maybe it will be a Jason Ray, for example, if I win. I just believe that we're at a crisis point, that we will be in the wilderness if we do not use this opportunity in 16, which I think has a potential to be a very good year for Democrats in Wisconsin, and start building the basis to win again. And it's based on message and recruitment.
What about Democrats like Senator Vinehout who make this point? We have had Democratic chairs from either Milwaukee or Dane County since 1987. Time for someone who...
I think it was 95. I think it was Marlis Matusik from Wanak, or from
Sosterich? Okay.
Sosterich anyway. Was in the 90s. Marlis Matusik was in there. She was from Wausau.
But the issue is...
We cannot sit here and
shouldn't
continue.
Be somebody from Milwaukee.
We
or
cannot
County.
Sit here and split the state up, which sadly it seems like that's what Kathleen's interview was doing by attacking the candidates and then saying, first of all, Milwaukee and Madison are a big part of the state. The Milwaukee metro market is 30% of the population of Wisconsin. The Madison metro market adds another, it's probably almost half the state is in those two markets. What, we're supposed to ignore them too? I'm saying that we have to put more emphasis in rural Wisconsin, but I do not think that you can say, ignore these guys to go help these guys. That's a recipe for disaster.
You've heard some people say this public debate, the fact that all five candidates are going to come on Wisconsin Eye and talk about their candidacies. But you've heard people say this is divisive and it's going to be a potentially pretty ugly convention vote, and this shouldn't be debated in public. Your response?
Debate it in public. No big issue.
No big issue?
No, as far as I can tell. I've debated with all of the current slot of candidates, because Martha's relatively new, a number of times already. There's never anything nasty.
Yeah, I think you have another debate coming up in Ashland.
We've got one in Ashland. We've got one in River Falls.
Right.
There's going to be one in Manitowoc, which I can't make because I already committed to go to Jefferson. There's a bunch of them. And it's democracy, you know.
Okay.
Debate. I feel comfortable debating any of my opponents. I think they feel comfortable debating me. Let the best person win.
We're almost out of time. Are you comfortable with where your campaign is?
Yeah.
And by the way, it is a campaign. When I lined up the interview with Jason Ray, he said, talk to my campaign manager.
I don't have one. I'm it.
You're it. But are you comfortable with where your campaign is?
Absolutely. People haven't forgotten Joe Winnicke and the Democratic Party. And people remember that when I was there, we were winning elections. And, I bring a level of experience, a level of maturity, a record of winning elections that I can sell pretty well. And I'm pretty good retail politician. Steve.
You won the election when Russ Feingold was elected to the U.S. Senate.
In 1993.
You then took his seat.
In 93. I was the only Democrat who won that special.
Has Russ endorsed you? Have you asked him?
No, I have not asked him, nor will I. Russ,
but there's no doubt in your mind he's going to come back and run against Senator Johnson.
No doubt in my mind he's running against Ron Johnson. And while I will be officially neutral, some things I just can't. I can't even say it with a straight face. I'm a Russ Feingold fan.
Okay. This sounds to me, is this a last hurrah campaign for Joe Winnicke?
No, I'm going to win and then I'm going to run again. Because we're going to win seats and we're going to beat Ron Johnson.
Okay.
No, it's not a last hurrah. I'm having fun. I will say this, with five candidates, I didn't have to work this hard the first time I ran for chair, but that's okay. The only thing I say is my poor Buick's getting a lot of miles on it.
I understand. Joe Winicky, one of five candidates for state Democratic chair. Look for Wisconsin Eye's interview, excuse me, with Jason Ray and former Representative Jeff Smith on April 1 and Martha Lanning on April 8th. Joe, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.